From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On this edition of Fresh Air, we begin a Monday series of broadcasts of our American Popular Song series. Today you're likely to say, "I didn't know he wrote that," as we hear and talk about the songs of Harry Warren. During the Depression, Warren wrote the songs for the Busby Berkeley movie musicals. His movie songs of the 40s included some of the most beautiful ballads popular during the war. Warren wrote so many great songs, we're devoting two shows to him. Our guest musicians, the John Pizzarelli Trio, will perform Warren's songs. We'll also talk with song historian Philip Furia, Warren's granddaughter, Julia Riva, and we'll hear archival recordings of Warren himself. A reprise of our American Popular Song series begins today on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Lullaby of Broadway. Music by Harry Warren, an incredibly successful songwriter with incredibly little name recognition. Today we do our small part to help change that. We'll listen to his songs, performed by the John Pizzarelli Trio, discuss Warren's career with an expert on movie musicals, and talk with Warren's granddaughter. The show is part of our series on American popular song. Warren had 42 songs on your hit parade between 1935 and 1950. That's 9 more than Irving Berlin. Although it was Warren's ambition to write for Broadway, he was part of the early migration of songwriters to Hollywood and became Hollywood's most prolific songwriter. He wrote the songs for the classic Busby Berkeley musicals of the 30s, including 42nd Street and the Gold Digger series, and went on to write for the films of Judy Garland, Bing Crosby, Glenn Miller, Betty Grable, Carmen Miranda, and Fred Astaire. His music helped get Americans through the Depression and World War II. Here's a medley we put together featuring some of Warren's hit songs.
Here's a beat of Dancing Feet. It's a song I love, the melody of 42nd Street.
We're in the money, we're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money.
I walk along the street of sorrow, the boulevard of broken dreams.
You must have been a beautiful baby. You must have been a wonderful child. Pardon me, boy, is that the Chattanooga Juju?
Yes, yes, track 29.
At last. No love, no nothing, until my baby comes home.
The more I see you, the more I want you.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine, that's amore.
Yes, sir, I'm so gay, I'm under the beer.
Well, those were just a few of Harry Warren's well-known songs. We've saved some of his best-known songs for the John Pizzarelli Trio to perform. John Pizzarelli is a guitarist and singer, and I might add, a Harry Warren fan. He's recorded several Warren songs, and he co-starred in the Broadway revue Dream, a salute to Johnny Mercer, who was, among other things, one of Warren's lyricists. John Pizzarelli grew up in a home filled with great music and great jazz musicians. His father is the guitarist Bucky Pizzarelli. John's trio features his brother Martin on bass and Ray Kennedy on piano. Well, John, thanks for joining us on this Harry Warren show. I think so many people have the reaction, oh, I know the song. I didn't know Harry Warren wrote that. Oh, I didn't know Harry Warren wrote that, too. And I'm wondering, John, when you became aware of Harry Warren as the guy who wrote all these great tunes.
I think it wasn't until I started looking at CD credits, or when you look under the title and see who wrote all those songs, and you start thinking, gee, that's Harry Warren. Even when asked to do this, just going back over the song titles of my record and going, I don't recall him writing this one or that one, and finding out, I was just quite ignorant of it, as I guess a lot of people are, of the greatness of this songwriter.
Well, I'd love for you to do Lullaby of Broadway, which was written by Harry Warren with lyricist Al Dubin for the movie Gold Diggers of 1935. It was one of those great Busby Berkeley musicals. Mm-hmm. And Lullaby of Broadway won a 1935 Academy Award for Best Song. Want to do it for us?
Sure thing. Ready, fellas? I want to.
Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway, the hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of a subway train, the rattle of the taxis, the daffodils who entertain at Angelo and Maxie's. When the Broadway baby says goodnight It's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. Good night. The milkman's on his way. Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight. Let's call it a day. Sleep tight, baby. Sleep tight, let's call it a day. Listen to the lullaby of old Broadway.
Great performance of a great song. John, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what's happening in that song musically. The syncopation of the first part of the song seems to fit so well with the lyric.
Well, what also is nice about the song is that he just uses that phrase. It's the same phrase, and he uses it in two different keys within the first 16 bars of the song. And I like how he goes to two different keys in the song also. So you always have that. And it has that Broadway feel to it, that sort of two-beat kind of, we're tap-dancing our way all around. And then he even puts the lullaby in. Play it like a lullaby at the end, Ray. So it's interesting, the mix of the two different feels in a rhythm song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the lullaby versus all that syncopation.
Right.
There's a story about Lullaby of Broadway I want you to hear. Lyricist Al Dubin wrote the lyric almost as a tribute to Harry Warren, because he knew that Harry Warren, in his early years of being in Hollywood, really missed Broadway and really missed New York. And so Dubin wrote this Lullaby of Broadway lyric. Warren loved it and kind of accepted it as a personal tribute. And although the song is now a classic, it almost didn't make it into the Gold Diggers movie, because the director of the movie, Busby Berkeley, didn't much like the song, and neither did Jack Warner, the head of the Warner Brothers studio. So I'm going to let Harry Warren tell the story himself, and this tape comes from the Harry Warren Archive.
Now, we played it for Buzz Berkeley. He didn't like it. We played it for Jack Warner. He didn't like it. We played it for Wallace. He didn't like it. Jack Warner came to me and says, I like that melody, but I don't like the lyric. Tell Dubin to write a new lyric. I said, Mr. Warner, you're destroying the song. We'll write you another song. He said, no, I want a new lyric. Just forget about it. I want the melody. I like that. He told me, I said, I will not divorce the lyric from this melody. You know, I got pretty mad about it. I didn't give a damn. I wasn't out here long enough. Didn't care, you know. So, when Jolson heard the song, he went up to Jack Warner's office and says, I want to use that song in my picture. We were doing a picture with him called Go Into Your Dance. Well, when Buzz Berkeley heard that, he rushed up to Jack Warner's office and said, he can't have that song. They wrote it for my picture. You know, the big thing started, so Berkeley went out. That's how the song got in the picture.
It's still the same way.
Do you think?
Sure. Well, it's funny. That's until somebody who can put their stamp on it, who means something, and everybody's convinced. It's, you know, it's interesting how that works.
I think this is a typical frustration that Harry Warren had in Hollywood, particularly in his early years working for the studio system. John, we're going to ask you and the trio to perform more Harry Warren songs later in the show. And in a moment, we're going to talk about Warren with an expert on movie musicals and Tin Pan Alley, Philip Furia. First, let's take a break. This is Fresh Air. This is a special edition of Fresh Air, devoted to composer Harry Warren. It's part of our series on American popular song.
Gone are my blues and gone are my tears. I've got good news to shout in your ears. The long-lost dollar has come back to the fold. With silver you can turn your dreams to gold. Oh, we're in the money. We're in the money.
During the Depression in the 30s, Warren and lyricist Al Dubin wrote the songs that accompanied the lavish production spectacles staged by Busby Berkeley in such films as 42nd Street and the Gold Diggers series, films that popularized the movie musical genre. Philip Furia is here to talk with us about Warren's role in the evolution of the movie musical. Furia is currently writing a book about Hollywood musicals and is the author of The Poets of Tin Pan Alley and Irving Berlin, A Life in Song. He's the chair of the English department at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Philip Furia, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
Harry Warren wrote so many well-known songs. How come his name isn't better known?
Well, he wondered about that himself. He thought it was because he primarily wrote out in Hollywood, whereas the more famous songwriters like Cole Porter and the Gershwins, Irving Berlin, established themselves on Broadway. And if you write for Broadway, you know, think of a Broadway marquee. It says, Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma, Irving Berlin's Annie Get Your Gun. The songwriter was clearly identified with a Broadway musical. But out in Hollywood, the songwriter was almost peripheral to the making of a Hollywood musical. Harry Warren grumbled once that out in Hollywood, a songwriter was the lowest form of life. Had very little say in how the songs were used. Wasn't part of putting the story together or deciding where songs would go. Was sometimes not even given a script, just told to write a choral song for Fred and Ginger. So that the songwriter was not very much a part of a Hollywood film musical and was never really associated the way songwriters were on Broadway.
It's kind of like that lyric from the Harry Warren Al Dubin song Dames, from the 1934 musical Dames, and the lyric goes, who writes the words and music for all the girly shows? No one cares and no one knows.
Right. Harry Warren even appeared in some of his own musicals, playing the role of a songwriter, and, you know, it just looks like another extra. So, yeah, you're right. It's a tragedy in some ways that he isn't more fully associated with those wonderful musicals.
Harry Warren wrote the songs for such 30s musicals as 42nd Street, Gold Diggers of 1933, Gold Diggers of 1935, 20 Million Sweethearts, Dames, Footlight Parade, Go Into Your Dance. But he really wanted to write for Broadway. He left New York for Hollywood during the Depression. When he left for Hollywood, what effect was the Depression having on Broadway and on Hollywood?
Well, if you think about how much it cost to put on a Broadway musical and what the ticket prices were, even back in the 1930s, the Depression almost darkened the lights of Broadway. There were very few musicals put on, certainly in the early years of the Depression. But in Hollywood, the musical was thriving. It was relatively cheap to buy a ticket to a movie theater. And many of the songwriters and performers, I mean, think of somebody like Fred Astaire, who originally started on Broadway in the 1920s, they all migrated westward to Hollywood. And there was a lot of work, and the public was going to movies when they could no longer afford to go to Broadway shows.
So there's just more work for songwriters in Hollywood.
Yeah, and the studios in Hollywood, once sound came in 1927 with the Al Jolson movie, The Jazz Singer, the Hollywood studios began buying up all the old music publishing firms that had once been called Tin Pan Alley in New York, so that the studios not only were using songs, they were producing them. They were having songwriters move to the West Coast to write songs to be used directly in films.
Well, how did Harry Warren end up writing songs for the Warner Brothers movie studio?
Well, there was a big wave of musicals right after The Jazz Singer in the late 1920s, and they were very popular. But movie musicals quickly exhausted themselves. The public got very tired of them by the early 1930s. In fact, theater owners were saying that people were coming up to the box office and saying, is this movie a musical? And if the answer was yes, they would walk away. They'd gotten so tired of the hackneyed formulas of the early musicals. And in 1933, Warner Brothers, that had been the studio that started musicals with The Jazz Singer, decided to try to bring back the musical. And there was a producer there, Daryl Zanuck, who later went on to become one of the major Hollywood producers. But he gambled that the public would return to musicals if they could be jazzier, more rhythmic, and given the nature of Warner Brothers movies, musicals are not grittier, much more realistic, much more New York-centered. So he brought Al Dubin, the lyricist, and Harry Warren, the composer, together and said he wanted very, very jazzy, rhythmic songs for 42nd Street. And he also added another important person, a choreographer named Busby Berkeley. And the combination of Dubin and Warren's songs and Berkeley's wonderful production numbers, really using the camera to create unheard-of kinds of spectacles to surround songs. That and that very gritty story of 42nd Street, the original kind of backstager. You see the underside of Broadway. All those elements combined to produce 42nd Street, and it was a smash success and really revived the whole genre of musicals. They began making them again, and of course that was followed by Fred and Ginger in 1934. So you had about another wonderful 10, 15 years of musicals, largely because of 42nd Street.
The title song from 42nd Street is a real upbeat song, but it's surprising when you actually see the movie. The production number is a street scene, a collaged street scene, and there's a lot of pretty downbeat things happening in there. Would you describe the production number?
Yeah, it's a street scene in New York, and you see all sorts of crime, a man strangling a woman in an upstairs apartment and throws her out the window onto the street. You know, people are getting mugged. It's still most people's image of New York today. But it was, you know, really for its time, a very, very different image of New York as a setting for a musical than anything that had come before it. It really revels in a kind of violence and grittiness. And the song itself still celebrates New York for that kind of energy.
Let's hear 42nd Street from the soundtrack of the 1932 film. Music from the film 42nd Street. The title song was on Variety's top 10 list for 11 weeks in 1932. My guest is Philip Furia, and we're talking about Harry Warren's songwriting career in the 30s. Was Harry Warren's music for 42nd Street and his subsequent Depression musicals different from the music in film musicals that had preceded him?
Yes. In fact, there's a wonderful moment in 42nd Street where they're rehearsing this very old schmaltzy kind of waltz. And the Warner Baxter, who plays the director, says, "Cut, cut, cut, get rid of that song. I was tired of it 20 years ago." And most of the early film musicals had very syrupy, sentimental waltz kinds of melodies to them. But Warren was a very jazzy songwriter. And in fact, when he first started writing songs in Tin Pan Alley in the 20s, before he started making movies, they complained that his songs had too many notes in them. But when Warren went out to Hollywood, that was exactly the style they wanted for 42nd Street. And when he teamed with Al Dubin, who was a very vernacular, colloquial lyricist, it was a wonderful match between rhythmic, jazzy, riffy music and very everyday vernacular lyrics. So it was a wonderful teaming up of the two styles.
Well, take a song like Lullaby of Broadway that John Pizzarelli just performed for us. Is that kind of like notiness and colloquialism in that song?
Oh, sure. Just think of the Hip Hooray and Ballyhoo, the Lullaby of Broadway. When a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's early in the morning. That's a very noty song, but the lyric is so relaxed and urbane and urban. Ballyhoo was a term that came out of the 1920s. Now we call it hype or PR. But it was a very current catchphrase, and Dubin works it right into the lyric.
Yeah, and the way the music is written, it's just this natural syncopation.
Yeah, and as with so many songs, it was always written music first, and then lyrics were added to it. So to be a lyricist with somebody like Harry Warren, it was quite a challenge because you really had to match syllable to note. And there were very tricky phrases, syncopated, abrupt, angular kinds of melodies. And to be able to match that with lyrics that sound like everyday conversation was a real challenge, and Dubin was a master at it.
Philip Furia is the author of The Poets of Tin Pan Alley and Irving Berlin, A Life in Song. He'll be back in the second half of our program. From the soundtrack of 42nd Street, here's Dick Powell singing Young and Healthy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Say, I know a bundle of humanity. She's about so high. And I'm nearly driven to insanity when she passes by. She's a snooty little cutie. She's been so hard to kiss. I'll try to overcome her vanity, and then I'll tell her this. I'm young and healthy, and you've got charms. It really be a sin not to have you in my arms. I'm young and healthy, and so are you. When the moon is in the sky, tell me what am I to do? Say, if I could hate you, I'd keep away. But that ain't my nature. I'm full of vitamin A.
This special edition of Fresh Air, one in a six-part series on American popular song, has been made possible by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more than 30 years, expanding America's understanding of who we were, who we are, and who we will be. Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. And from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. And from Random House Inc.'s Bantam Books Division, publisher of Younger Than That Now, A Shared Passage from the 60s by Jeff Dershowitz and Ruth Williams, a memoir. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we meet Harry Warren's granddaughter, Julia Riva. She runs the music publishing company he founded. We hear an archival recording of Warren performing. We talk more about his songs with Philip Furia, and the John Pizzarelli Trio plays more songs by Warren. That's them playing A Quarter to Nine. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today's show is devoted to composer Harry Warren. It's part of our series on American popular song. Our guest performers are the John Pizzarelli Trio, featuring John Pizzarelli, guitar and vocals, John's brother Martin Pizzarelli, bass, and Ray Kennedy, piano. Let's pick up where we left off, talking about Warren's trend-setting musicals of the 30s when he was working with lyricist Al Dubin and choreographer Busby Berkeley. John, why don't you and the trio do one of the songs from 42nd Street? How about You're Getting to Be a Habit with Me?
Sure, we'd love to play that. Ray, why don't you start us off?
Every kiss, every hug seems to act just like a drug. You're getting to be a habit with me. Let me stay in your arms. I'm addicted to your charms. You're getting to be a habit with me. I used to think your love was something that I could take. take or leave alone. But now I couldn't do without my supply. I need you for my own. Oh, I can't break away. I must have you every day, as regularly as coffee or tea. You've got me in your clutches and I can't break free. You're getting to be a habit with me. Regularly as coffee or tea. You've got me in your clutches and I can't break free. You're getting to be a habit with me. You can't break it. You're getting to be a habit with me.
That's the John Pizzarelli Trio with John Pizzarelli on guitar and vocals, Ray Kennedy at the piano, and Martin Pizzarelli on bass. Another great Harry Warren song. John, what's happening musically in that song that you'd like to point out to us?
What I like particularly about that song is the way, how easy it is to sing, even with all those, he's got all those little triplets and things in there. Especially my favorite part being, I must have you every day, as regularly. Regularly just seems to just come right out. You would have thought they would have somehow tried to get the AR or something out of that, like regularly, or so, but it just works. It's got a great flow to it.
I'm really glad you said that, because early in Harry Warren's career, he was criticized for writing songs that were too notey. And I think he was criticized in part by people who felt that they would be hard to sing, but too notey was the word.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how it all fits together. It seems to work. And the chord structure is very interesting to that song. He always seems to have a little melodic phrase that repeats. He's got da-ba-da, 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 ba-do-ba-da. It's really great. Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's got a nice jazz feeling to it. It just works so wonderfully.
I'm going to ask our pianist, Ray Kennedy, anything you want to add about the song, Ray?
Well, I was going to point out the fact that the chords are somewhat unusual, especially for a popular song.
What's unusual about them?
Well, there's a lot of there are a lot of departures from the normal 1-6-2-5 chord structure that you usually find, especially in songs from this era. And some of the things that he did are what we would consider to be way out in left field, but because of the melody that he uses, he ties it together so well.
Can you show me what you mean at the piano?
For instance, this part. You know, those kind of things you just normally wouldn't find in a popular song.
And plus, it begins on the four chord. It's in the key of E flat, but it begins on an A flat chord.
That's right, yeah.
Which is interesting. So you always have to get back to that chord, which is, you know, usually you would say in the key of E flat would be Invicus, but it's not there. It's actually da 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 da. There's E flat. Da 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 da. It's unusual.
That's right.
The next song I'm going to ask you to do is I Only Have Eyes for You, another of the great Harry Warren songs from the 1930s, also written for a movie musical. Ray Heindorf, who orchestrated a lot of the Warner Brothers musicals of that period, once said, "The real test for a melody is to play it with one finger on a piano. You can do that with Warren's music, and it still sounds great." So I thought we would try that with our next song. And Ray, can I ask you to just play the melody line with one finger for I Only Have Eyes for You? It's a pretty melody.
No, it's great. It's fabulous.
Look, why don't we put it all together and have you do the whole song? This
sure.
is the John Pizzarelli Trio.
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright, 'cause I only have eyes for you. The can't see a thing in the sky, 'cause I only have eyes for you. I don't know if we're in a garden or on a crowded avenue. You are here, so am I. Maybe millions of people go by, but they all disappear from view.
John Pizzarelli Trio. Well, I think we established before we even heard the whole song what a nice melody it was. It sure is. What about the chords? What do you think of the chords in that song, John?
I think it refers to the same thing Ray talked about earlier, where he doesn't start on square one because he starts on the minor chord right at the beginning, or the two chord, as we would say, in the key of B flat, which is C minor. And he also, he puts that turn, he always has the melody note in a weird place when he goes, "Are the stars out tonight? Da 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 da." It's, you know, that's a real jazz harmonies that he's employing there. That's why the Count Basie band plays this song so well, because it just moves right along. There's not really a lot of chords, but the right ones in the right spots.
John Pizzarelli. His trio will be back tomorrow for part two of our program on Harry Warren. We'll talk more with Philip Furia, an expert on Hollywood musicals, and meet Harry Warren's granddaughter after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our conversation with Philip Furia about composer Harry Warren and his role in the evolution of the Hollywood musical in the 30s. Furia is the author of several books on American popular song. He's writing a book about Hollywood musicals. You know, I recently read an article from the September 1929 edition of the movie magazine Photoplay, and it was about the migration of songwriters from New York to Hollywood. The article was titled "Westward: The Course of Tin Pan Alley." Now, Harry Warren was part of that migration. He actually wanted to write for Broadway, but he ended up in Hollywood. What effect did the success of his musicals and of the other movie musicals of the 30s have on Broadway and Tin Pan Alley, and the way songs became hits?
Well, when that migration occurred in the 1930s, it pretty much wiped out what had been Tin Pan Alley, which was basically a group of song publishers. They mainly traded in sheet music. And in some ways it was a real loss, because these were people who really knew the kind of songs the public wanted. They got songwriters to target their songs to particular topics or certain styles. They really knew the business. And out in Hollywood, they were movie producers. And when they took over the songwriting industry, they weren't always the best people to tell the songwriters what was needed. So it completely destroyed what had been a very vital songwriting industry housed in New York and moved it out to Hollywood.
Now, the Hollywood studios ended up owning an enormous number of songs. And, of course, they wanted those songs to sell. They wanted the records to sell and the sheet music to sell. How did Hollywood market its songs?
Well, they marketed the songs to sell the movies and the movies to sell the songs. It was a wonderful two-way street for them because people would go to a movie to hear certain popular songs, and then they would come out of the movie and buy recordings or sheet music of those songs. And Hollywood controlled the songs, controlled their production, owned the songs, and sometimes would buy a musical that had been on Broadway. And if they didn't own the songs, they would throw all the songs out, if they were by somebody like Rodgers and Hart, and they would hire their own songwriters to write new songs. And, you know, they completely destroyed whatever integrity the show had. They almost did it with Showboat. They were going to hire Irving Berlin to write a whole new raft of songs for Showboat and throw out Old Man River. I mean, can you imagine that? Showboat without Old Man River? But the songs had become so popular that not even Hollywood studio executives could sink to that level of substituting new songs for it.
You know, it's so funny. Harry Warren, just about all his life, I think, wanted to write for Broadway. And instead, he goes to Hollywood and ends up writing backstage musicals about Broadway shows.
Yeah, he loved New York. He hated living out in Hollywood. Hollywood, remember, at that time, was a pretty barren place. It wasn't, you know, anything like it is now. And he missed New York, the rhythm, the energy, the restaurants in New York. And I think a lot of what came out in the music is that kind of nostalgia he had for this wonderful, vital city. And Warner Brothers really saw itself as the studio that was very closely aligned with New York, with city life, with working-class people. And so many of its musicals as well as its gangster movies were set in New York. So, yeah, it was kind of a West Coast imitation of the world he'd left behind.
FDR was inaugurated in 1933. That was the same year that 42nd Street was produced. Is there any connection between his campaign and the spirit of the movie?
Oh, yeah. The Warner Brothers saw itself as big Roosevelt supporters. And they actually released 42nd Street timed to coincide with his inauguration. I think they had it open in Washington, D.C. the day Roosevelt was inaugurated. And they had always seen themselves as the studio that portrayed working-class people, that portrayed city life. And they really built that into the musical in a way it had never been part of the Hollywood musical before. So that they tried in most of the musicals that Harry Warren and Al Dubin wrote to always have some kind of social significance song in it and portrayed not elegant people like Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, you know, waltzing on the top of a penthouse. But they really portrayed working-class people and had them singing, often in great big communal numbers. So you had a sense of people banding together, whether they were putting on a show or, you know, eking out some kind of livelihood in the Depression. But Warner Brothers really saw itself as very much aligned with what Roosevelt was trying to do in the middle of the Depression.
Well, this reminds me of a song that Warren and Dubin wrote for the musical Gold Diggers of 1933, a song called Remember My Forgotten Man. The song is similar to Brother Can You Spare a Dime and its message, but this time it's sung from the point of view of a woman whose man marched off into World War I, survived only to end up on the Depression breadlines. And musically, it's part torch song and part march. Would you say a few words about the song and about the production number behind it?
Yeah, you know, so many of the songs in the 20s and 30s had to be love songs. And it is a love song. It was sung by Joan Blondell, and it's actually a racially mixed cast that performs it. There are black women who are lamenting their forgotten men along with white women. So in that sense, it was a fairly experimental kind of number. But it's a song that really talks about the horrors of the Depression. And it begins with women singing almost a kind of blues lament. And again, it's choreographed by Busby Berkeley. And as the women are singing, the men move from soup lines and selling apples back into their World War I costumes, and they begin marching. The song turns into a march tempo. And there's this marvelous kind of Art Deco spectacle as they go climbing up, marching up the stairs. And Berkeley has it choreographed so overwhelmingly, but the whole character of the song changes, and it really ends up kind of triumphantly with the men who begin as bums turning out to recapture, in a way, the power that they once had when they were soldiers.
Well, why don't we hear the song? And this is the original recording from the movie.
Remember my forgotten man. From his brow, but look at him right now. And once he used to love.
Remember My Forgotten Man, music by Harry Warren, lyrics by Al Dubin, sung by Etta Moten. We'll continue our conversation with Philip Furia tomorrow and find out how Warren's music developed in the 40s and 50s. Coming up, we'll hear from Harry Warren's granddaughter, Julia Riva, who now heads Warren's music publishing company. This is Fresh Air. This edition of Fresh Air is devoted to the songs of Harry Warren, the most prolific songwriter for Hollywood musicals in the 30s and 40s. Warren's music publishing company, 4J's, which he founded in 1954, is now headed by his granddaughter, Julia Riva. She was very close to Warren and, as you'll hear, affectionately refers to him as Daddy. Julia Riva, welcome to Fresh Air. Did you get to watch your grandfather, Harry Warren, writing songs?
Sure.
Anything you could tell us about the process?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I once said to him, you know, Daddy, well, how do you write a song? He said, well, I can't really tell you anything about writing a song. You just sit down and get quiet and a tune will come to you. And I used to think, okay, right. But, you know, he would sit at the piano, light up a cigarette. He had a, you know, big tummy, and he'd sit there and hum and write. You know, I can see him with his pencil jotting down notes. And, you know, we'd be in there. Occasionally he'd scream at us. Ah, be quiet. And, you know, that was Daddy writing music, just like he always was. You know, it was just part of everyday life. And he wrote every day, Terry.
Would you sit at the piano every day and write?
Every day. He only took time out for golf and going to the delicatessen. Now, that was another big part of life was, you know, getting food for daddy, you know, getting the right salamis and all that other stuff, you know.
A lot of songwriters were also known as great performers. You know, Harold Arlen recorded records, Johnny Mercer made records, Cole Porter was famous for performing at parties. Harry Warren was not famous as a performer. Was he a good performer, do you think?
I think he was a good performer. I think Daddy was probably more famous as a droll wit. You know, I mean, he used to perform at the parties that we had at the house. And he was pretty good, you know. If people wanted him to play, he would always sit down and play.
We have a medley that he did at an ASCAP songwriter tribute in 1966.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say, I was surprised hearing him. I think uh-huh. I'll play this for everybody to hear, and okay. I think they might be surprised too at how he sounds. So this was an ASCAP songwriter tribute, and Julie Stein performed, and Harold Arlen and Sammy Kahn and Arthur Schwartz and Hoagie Carmichael and Harry Warren. And here's Harry Warren doing a medley of his songs. Julia Riva, were you in the audience that night?
Oh, I probably was. It made me cry to hear that.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think of...
Well, I think he's not a great singer. I think he was right.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering if that affected his career, the fact that he wasn't a great singer and he wasn't a great pianist. He was a great songwriter.
I guess so. I mean, he said it himself. If he'd been he wouldn't have been a songwriter. He probably would have been a performer. And I think he must have been nervous because he actually could be a better singer than that. But he probably was, shy performing in front of everybody.
Right. Do you have a personal favorite of your grandfather's songs?
Well, I Like It Last. It was interesting that that's what he was singing there. It was very touching to me.
Do you have a favorite version of it?
I do. I like the Etta James recording.
I love it, too, and it's funny. It was used in a car commercial. I forget which car, a couple of years ago.
It was in a Jaguar commercial.
So it must be so interesting for you now, as the head of your grandfather's music publishing company, to see the new lives that his old songs have.
It's very fun, and I love it, and I can't wait to see more of it happen because, you know, they deserve it, and it's really wonderful to think that a whole new generation of people will get to learn these songs and enjoy them because they're very fabulous.
Julia Riva is Harry Warren's granddaughter. She now heads his music publishing company, 4J's Music. Here's Etta James' 1960 recording of Warren's 1942 song, At Last, written with lyricist Matt Gordon for the movie Orchestra Wives.
At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over.
Join us tomorrow when the John Pizzarelli Trio, Philip Furia, and Julia Riva return for part two of our program on the songwriter Harry Warren. We'll listen to and talk about his music from the 40s and 50s and find out how he reacted when rock and roll took over the charts. We'll close with a 1940 concert recording of the Harry Warren Johnny Mercer song Jeepers Creepers, written for the 1938 film Going Places, in which it was sung by Louis Armstrong.
I don't care what the weatherman says. When the weatherman says it's raining, you'll never hear me complaining. I'm certain the sun will shine. I don't care how the weather vane points. When the weather vane points to gloomy, it's gotta be sunny to me. When your eyes look into mine, jeepers creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Jeepers creepers, where'd you get those eyes?
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our series on American Popular Song is produced in collaboration with Margaret Pick and the Pacific Vista Productions team with Terry Bronson. Anne-Marie Baldonado is the series' associate producer. The performances by the John Pizzarelli Trio were recorded by Jim Zack at NOLA Studios in New York. Joyce Lieberman is the technical supervisor for our series. Additional engineering by Bob Purdick and Audrey Bentham. Digital consulting by Gemma Hooley of the Soundprint Multimedia Center. Our thanks to Julia Riva, Jophie Jones-Gaddis, and Dick Harpum of the Harry Warren Archive, Jim Steinblatt of ASCAP, Rudy Belmer, author of Inside Warner Brothers, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Archive, the Warner Brothers Archive at the University of Southern California, Hugh Forden of DRG Records, Bob Leone of the Songwriters Hall of Fame, Chris Payton at the Johnny Mercer Archive, Dwight Blocker Bowers of the Smithsonian Institution, film critic Leonard Maltin, and pianist Dick Hyman. I'm Terry Gross. This special edition of Fresh Air, one in a six-part series on American popular song, has been made possible by a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. For more than 30 years, expanding America's understanding of who we were, who we are, and who we will be. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Random House, Inc. and its Vintage Books Division, paperback publishers of The First World War by John Keegan. This is NPR, National Public Radio. On the next Fresh Air, part two of our special on songwriter Harry Warren, with guest performers, the John Pizzarelli Trio. We'll talk about Warren's songs of the 40s, which included some of the most popular love ballads of the war years. And we'll hear how his songs were reinterpreted by doo-wop and pop performers in the 50s and 60s. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.